Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's Breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
This is the moment, tonight is the night, we'll fight till it's over.
So you're listening to After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Every time my grandmother says nothing good happens after 2 a.m., I remind her that our radio show is on after 2 a.m. in the East Coast, the West Coast, every other coast. So some good things happen after 2 a.m.
You turned me. I'm in 100% agreement.
What?
You are the greatest broadcast sports journalist of all time.
Amy, you're the most best talk show radio on National Radio Broadcasting Air Networks. You're the best.
I appreciate that, though I don't really need you to tell me.
Good morning, Amy.
Morning.
I've been listening to you for the last few months, every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Boom.
Yes, boom.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I hope for you that you're not stuck somewhere that you don't want to be because of severe weather. Thankfully, my mom is not stuck somewhere she doesn't want to be, but she was supposed to be back home in Texas as of Sunday evening. Instead, because of the hundreds of flights that were canceled in New York City airports, she ends up staying with us for another night and day and will attempt to fly out again on Monday evening. But I tell you this, and I say it with all sincerity, I might have the best hubs in the world. Reason number 800. No. Let's go 8,000. Reason number 8,962 why my husband is a keeper. It's a veritable monsoon and thunderstorms, lightning. It's pouring outside of our house and really in all of northern New Jersey on Sunday evening. But my mom kind of threw in the towel, decided she wasn't going to sit at the airport any longer. She'd been there for hours. The flight was just perpetually delayed. After they got on board once, they started to push back from the gate. And then, oh no, we're going back to the gate, and they deplaned. So she sat in the airport for hours and hours. She was hungry. There was no hope that, well, there was very little hope the flight was going to take off. So she finally waved the white flag. Her husband rebooked her, and I was already big into work prep. I was watching football. I was watching the Little League World Series Classic between the Yankees and Tigers, and I just couldn't get away. And in the middle of a monsoon, he hopped in his truck and said he was happy to go retrieve mom from the airport. So yes, I am blessed. I am so thankful for him. It took them a couple hours to get back because the rain was that bad and they could only really go about 20 to 25 miles per hour plus traffic. I know many of you experiencing the same thing. There's been a lot of rain. There have been a bunch of different parts of our country who've dealt with flooding and with extreme weather conditions. And every time we get a portion of that in the area, I'm always very thankful for a house on a slab that does not have a basement, so it cannot flood. But I know even some of our colleagues are dealing with flooding from Sunday night. And just, it's a mess. It's always a mess and very stressful. Most importantly, be safe. I know that's priority number one, you, your family, your loved ones, your pets. And then, of course, dealing with some of the cleanup and the fallout is a challenge as well. We're happy to keep you company on this Monday morning. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, our Facebook page, also on Twix, A-Law Radio. If you missed the big announcement about our next producer here on the show, that was done an hour ago. And of course, we'll be repeating that announcement. You can always get it on our podcast, which is available within minutes of the show wrapping up with the boom. It's available within minutes of the boom at the end of every single show. Our phone number, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. Here in these next few minutes, not only is Caitlin Clark the leading assist getter, is that a phrase? She's the assist leader. That would have been far less awkward. She is the WNBA's assist leader overall, meaning she's averaging more assists per game than any other player in the WNBA right now, rookie or veteran. I'll admit, I thought that her three-point shooting and her ability to knife through the lane, cut to the hoop, but also pull up from the logo and can threes would be what tilted the WNBA on its axis. That's what I thought would be her greatest impact, at least initially. Now, this is even though she led women's college basketball in assists last season, right? So she did both. She led women's hoops in scoring, but also led them in assists. It's not been that way in the WNBA. She's faced the toughest defenses. The best defensive guards in the league are assigned to Caitlin Clark, game in and game out. But she's found another way to make an impact. So those of you who believe she was one-dimensional, well, think again. She's already proved that. A dozen games to go, and she now holds the rookie single-season assist record. With a dozen games to go. We could talk about it, but I think the overall single season assist record is very much in her sights. Again, she's averaging 8.3 assists per game. We've seen her have a game of 19 assists. And she's got a dozen left. I know it doesn't require a math teacher, though my mom was one. Is one? Once a math teacher, always a math teacher. Doesn't require a math teacher to multiply 12 times 8. It does not. Let's just say she averages 8 assists the rest of the way. Well, that's another 96 of them. So yes, when I say the overall record for rookies or veterans is very much in her sights, well, we've seen her track down records and record holders before. So a little bit of Caitlin Clark and, by the way, completely rejuvenated are the Indiana Fever, and I dare say many other players around the league who did not participate in the Olympics. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. The Fever is back. 3 weeks did not temper the enthusiasm for fans who were anxious and are anxious to continue to track her career. Major League Baseball last night. Great setting. Love it in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. For the Yankees and the Tigers, such a neat opportunity. And I just love that Major League Baseball continues to knock it out of the park, so to speak, with these various nostalgic type settings. So we've seen this Williamsport game now take place for, was a handful of years. I can't remember exactly when it started. And they rotate different teams in and out, which is awesome. Not only do the teams get a chance to experience it, but the kids who are there have a chance to interact with some of their heroes. Aaron Judge, Juan Soto. These guys are obviously larger than life to kids who are 12 and 13. And probably larger than life to a lot of adult baseball fans as well. But to show up there earlier on Sunday, to roll down the hill with the kids, to sign autographs, to take selfies, even to get interviewed by what was a teenage broadcast crew called the Kid Cast. It was an alternate broadcast that you could watch on Sunday evening. I love it. I love it that it encourages these young kids to continue to pursue their dreams, number one, but also it encourages their joy at playing baseball. And this is exactly what Rob Manfred wants to do. Now, I would say baseball's incentive is a little more bottom line and maybe less growing the game at the grassroots level and more trying to produce young fans who will be faithful to baseball in its new snippy and snappy format. But still, whatever the motivation is for baseball, it's a home run. Like the trip to the Field of Dreams, or Cornfield in Iowa the last couple of years. They're doing construction now, so it's not happening this year. And I don't exactly know when they can get back to those games, but that got delayed. Of course, heading to Birmingham, not wanting it to be a tribute to Willie Mays, but a tribute to the Negro Leagues. And as it turned out, it was also the perfect and certainly bittersweet tribute to Willie. But that was amazing. Incredible atmosphere, rave reviews. And then this Little League World Series classic that continues for Major League Baseball. And I thought it was kind of neat, too. In a ballpark that holds 2,300, the majority of which are players themselves, right? Because there was a game with the young kids going on earlier in the day on Sunday. But not just an opportunity for the kids to play in front of their heroes, but also for the kids to then sit there and watch with their families in an intimate setting like this ballpark where there's 2,300 seats. Maybe some of them have gone to major league parks. Maybe some of these families have season tickets to major league parks. But I dare say the majority of them don't get to go on a regular basis. And kind of cool, too, that Aaron Judge had his parents on hand. They were named Little League Parents of the Year. Sweet honor, because he's talked about what playing Little League in California meant to him as a player. And yeah, the experience for Aaron Judge, you could see it on his face. You could see it in his body language, just his joy at being there with the kids and spending time with them beyond the game, even as the Yankees pursue best record in Major League Baseball. Just to hang out with these kiddos and to make their day, that's really neat.
Definitely, you know, I wish we got to spend more time with the kids and hang out with them. You know, we kind of got rushed around a little bit, but, you know, the moments we did get to spend with them and get to talk with them and just really just answer questions, have some fun with them, ask them questions about how they're doing, how are they enjoying this experience out here. That for me was definitely the best part.
It was an incredible day in all facets. I mean, we get here early. Everybody enjoyed it. We go over, hang out with the kids, come over, work's interrupted with the rain, but we know we're going to play. And then it was a really well-played game, I think, on both sides, well-pitched games, certainly.
So A.J. Hinch leading what is one of the youngest teams in Major League Baseball with the Detroit Tigers. And yes, they have Tarek Skubal, who's on the mound and who has another quality start, though this game goes into extras. But a lot of these young guys, it would be too cute and campy to say that they're not that far removed from Little League, but a lot of these guys are not that far removed from the minor leagues or getting drafted, and it's a youth movement for the Tigers, and here they are just a few games under 500 and making some noise. Now, this game went into extras because they rallied in both the ninth inning and then into the 10th, able to get the walk-off. You want to play those highlights, you can. 47 and 49. Andrew's on the other side of the double pane glass. And yeah, it was a fun finish for the kiddos there in Williamsport.
Young waiting on a 1-1. On the way, swinging a line drive. Base hit into left. Rounding third and heading home, Keith. Throw to the plate. Not in time. Tigers have tied it in the ninth. Jays, Young delivers. The pitch, swinging a line drive. Base hit into left. McKinstry's being waved around third. Dominguez has a big arm. A hesitation. The throw home. Not in time. Tigers win. Zach McKinstry delivers the tying run with a single. Scores the winning run on a Parker Meadows base hit into left. The Tigers walk it off in the Little League Classic.
Yeah, it felt good. You know, all year this team, we fight till the end, and you saw it tonight. Credit to, you know, JJ getting a knock there in the ninth inning, and then, you know, good defense in the 10th, and then, you know, Z-Max stole the base and got in scoring position. And I was just, you know, trying to put a ball in play and help the team win, so it was cool.
On the Tigers radio network, Parker Meadows, one of those young guys that's part of that youth movement. And just the idea that they can inspire because they're young, right? They're not old guys who are superstars, maybe feel like the kids can't relate. Sure, they love Juan Soto. They love Aaron Judge. But these guys are making hundreds of millions of dollars. Maybe a little bit easier to relate to younger guys who are just kind of breaking in and leaving their mark in Major League Baseball. And yeah, a lot of youth on the Tigers roster. But Tarek Skubal, he's terrific. And we got to see the matchup between him and Aaron Judge. A couple of strikeouts in there for Judge. And Skubal had good success with the top of the order for the Yankees. So ended up with Gleyber Torres getting a hit, but striking out twice. Soto goes hitless with a K. Judge has a hit, but also a couple of Ks. Really not till Giancarlo Stanton did the Yankees have much success in that top four there. He goes 2 for 3, but none of them have an RBI, and the Yankees can only muster really 6 hits and a couple of runs. When you're looking at standings, and I try not to look at standings too much, but I've noticed something. The Orioles and Yankees still dead even. Exact same record on this Monday morning, August 19th. O's and Yankees are both 73 and 52. The Guardians have dropped 3 in a row. They got swept over the weekend. So they have taken a step back in that race for best record in the American League. But do you know who they got swept by? And this is key. Because maybe you didn't see it coming, or maybe you did. But the Brewers are surging right now. They've won 5 in a row. They've won 7 of their last 10. And they're the team that got the best of the Guardians, that kind of cooled off the Guardians over the weekend with what was a series sweep. So they are just a half game behind the pace being set by Orioles and Yankees. Phillies also have 73 wins. So I guess if we're just talking National League, Brewers have 1 win less than the Phillies and the Dodgers, who right now are both 73 wins and different losses, but 73 wins each. But the Brewers are hot on their heels. So without scoreboard watching, without going into all of the standings, I'm thinking that we will have some lively races moving forward. But we still have a couple weeks of dog days and then stretch run, baby, just as football season is starting. I know we don't see a ton of the starters in this preseason, but we did get starters for the Chiefs this weekend, preseason weekend number 2. And oh yeah, even in the preseason, Patrick Mahomes can dazzle us, except his behind the back pass was actually meant to spite Travis Kelce. Only Mahomes. He'll explain coming up. Good morning to you at A-Law Radio on our Facebook page as well. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
The Lion 33, 3-0 Kansas City. Steele gets it. No, they're going to fake it to him. They get it to Kelce on that RPO fake. Great rut, and he throws it behind his back. Mahomes has been practicing this at camp.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
Even Mitch Holt is surprised by seeing that Patrick Mahomes threw the ball behind his back to Travis Kelce. And oh yeah, the reaction on social, it was viral. It was classic Patrick Mahomes, vintage Pat. There goes Mahomes again. Mahomey, la la la. Except there's more to the story. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Actually, Mitch Holt will be calling the Chiefs and Ravens coming up in 2.5 weeks. So games that count. Thursday, September 5th, 2 weeks from this Thursday. Are you kidding me? I can't believe that we're so close to Labor Day, so close to September, and yet I'm ready for it, I think. I'm not sure the teams are ready for it, but I'm ready for football games that count. Online at A-Law Radio, and then our Facebook page as well. Always good to connect with you. So as it turns out, that Patrick Mahomes behind the back pass was not, hey, why don't we dazzle the masses? Or hey, why don't we try something new? This feels like a good opportunity. No, actually, he was ticked off.
I mean, long story short, Travis didn't run the route he was supposed to run, and then it was kind of a behind-the-back pass, kind of because I was mad. I was pissed off at Travis. He was supposed to run a flat route. I don't know if you can hear me on the broadcast. I'm yelling at him, and then he doesn't run it. So out of spite, I do a behind-the-back pass.
It's a first down, you know? He's got the voice thing. So he kind of mumbled out the play. I couldn't hear it. I was walking up to the line. I was like trying to decipher what he was saying. Before I knew it, he snapped the ball. And then I kind of saw him out of my peripheral run to the sideline. So I was trying to go help my guy out. By the time I looked over there, he was already in mid-form, like a photo on a sports card, throwing the ball to me. So it was just, right place at the right time.
Two completely different versions of the story, right? Patrick Mahomes is ticked off because Travis Kelce doesn't run the route that he wants. And so as he's trying to improvise, he decides, out of spite, you can get the pass behind the back. Meanwhile, Kelce says he's mumbling in his Kermit the Frog here voice, and I can't hear the play. And so I'm just trying to help him out. So I see him run toward the sideline. I go with him. If you've seen the play, it's easy to find Mahomes behind the back pass. So yeah, Kelce starts to break toward the right. He says it's because he was following Mahomes and trying to give him a target. And here comes this photo op, this highlight reel moment. And yet, as Mahomes tells Trent Green on CBS Sports, that was not the whole point. The whole point was to spite Travis Kelce. Kelce also spoke with Travis Green. So yeah, the behind the back pass, he has been practicing it, which is what Mitch Holthus has said. And so he didn't want to force it. He wanted it to happen naturally in the flow of the game. And that was when he trotted it out.
Wasn't how it was drawn up, but I always told you it has to happen naturally. I can't like force it, and I did it, and then I actually forgot about it, and then that, like, as the game went on, they asked me about it. I was like, oh yeah, it probably looked pretty cool, but I haven't actually got to see it yet.
So that, in the wake of the game, hadn't seen the video, but it is sort of funny that it was done to spite his longtime teammate, not to make him look good. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Now, I got a text message right after that happened. I did not see it live. Mom was visiting, so I was fairly checked out from sports for a good portion of the last few days. And then, of course, had to do all of my prep and catching highlights and catching up on Sunday. So I see the text from a family member who says, Patrick Mahomes taking a page out of Caitlin Clark's book, or imitating Caitlin Clark, I think is what he texted. Well, no. Pat's been doing this for quite a while. The highlight reel moments, the improv, the throwing sidearm, throwing with the left hand, throwing off his wrong foot, throwing back across his body when he's going the other direction. That's Patrick Mahomes. Extending plays until Kelce gets open and then somehow figuring out a window, a very narrow window, maybe through the eye of a needle, to get the ball to his open receivers. So I thought that was kind of funny that the comparison was made, Patrick Mahomes and Caitlin Clark. But right on cue, what does Clark do? Well, she's leading the WNBA in assists with more than 8 per game. She's already set the single game record for 19 assists. That's rookie or veteran. No one had ever had 19 assists in a single game. And now she's got another record to add to her rookie resume. And it's pretty impressive because as much as Caitlin can shoot the lights out, same as Steph Curry, right? They've got range. Those logo threes, those threes in the face of the defense, those threes can be demoralizing to the opponent, but also they're candy for those of us who love highlights and want to watch the big play in the clutch moments. So yeah, people watched her shoot her way to a new NCAA scoring record at Iowa. And I very often have compared her arc to Steph Curry, because even though Steph's father was an NBA player himself, and even though Steph grew up in NBA locker rooms, he was skinny. He was little. What got the attention for him and Davidson was his ability to shoot the lights out and propel his school to the Elite Eight of an NCAA tournament. That's what put Steph Curry on the board, similar to Caitlin Clark. That's what put her and Iowa on the board, is their run in the NCAA tournament in what was essentially her junior season. What people found out about, well, Steph and now Caitlin Clark, is they have handles. They're not just about shooting threes. And that's been part of the criticism of Caitlin going back to when she started this WNBA season. But think about it. No time off from a long college basketball season that ended with another Final Four in Cleveland, right into the draft, the awards circuit, the corporate sponsors, the taping of commercials, the appearances, the interviews, and then boom, right into her WNBA career. Not until the Olympics break did she have a chance to get away. She went to Mexico. She enjoyed visiting Yankee Stadium, but had some other commitments in New York. She spent time with family and friends. She looks rejuvenated. The Fever look rejuvenated. But anybody who believed that she was only about shooting three-pointers just wasn't paying attention. And it's kind of funny, actually, to think there are people out there who aren't paying attention to Caitlin Clark because she's all the rage this year. But that's the truth. If you think she's one-dimensional and all she can do is shoot the three, you're just not watching. She also can get to the hoop. She does a great job now. And as she grows stronger in the WNBA, she's got no issues with confidence. But as she goes stronger and gets used to the style of defense that she faces in the league, well, then she'll be more comfortable driving to the hoop. But right now, her teammates know to have heads up, heads on a swivel, if you will, and pay attention. Anytime there is a quick rebound and the ball's in Caitlin's hands, well, first of all, they're looking to put the ball in Caitlin's hands. Her teammates are streaking. One or two of them, they know to get down the court because if they're even remotely open, she will find them with a perfect pass. And it continues to happen. Her turnovers are down now as she and her teammates find more of a rhythm and her teammates know to look for those deep passes. And here she is now with another 9 assists against Seattle on Sunday, has already set the new rookie record for single season assists. She's sitting on 232 with a dozen games to go. You guys, she's not done. And the reason that I believe the single season mark in WNBA history, now this is veterans and rookies, the reason I believe that record is well within her reach is that it's 316 and actually was just set last year by Alyssa Thomas. And so not only is Caitlin cutting down on turnovers, connecting with her teammates, the Fever have won back-to-back games. She's developing great chemistry with players like Kelsey Mitchell, who very often leads the Fever in scoring.
Yeah, I think we've gotten a lot better just like understanding each other as we're playing the game, looking for each other when each other's hot. Like Kels got hot there, made a few in a row. So you're just looking to find her. I think in transition, especially the way she runs the floor with her speed, I've always got my eyes up trying to look to find her. And I think she can tell like when I want her to go back door, when I want her to come cut off the ball or anything like that. And just that chemistry that you get used to playing with one another, it's taken time, but I think we're really starting to get it down.
I really wanted her to empower her teammates. I really wanted her to do a lot of talking to her teammates. So there was a lot of times whether it was drills or running certain offenses, I would tell her and only her so she would be able to get out and tell the players, you know, what we were running or where to go. I would throw some things out there with some sets that we haven't run. So she had to think it through and put people in the right position.
Oh, cut her off a little bit there. So Christy Sides with a great point, and I like the fact that they put her in this position over and over again. Initially, they throw her right into the fire, and they're asking her to be an extension of the coaching staff on the court by only telling her the play, by making her adjust to what the defense is giving the Fever, by not only forcing her, but asking her to use her court vision and her passing skills to keep her teammates involved. That's huge. And so I love the way that Christy Sides, she uses the words empowered. I love the way that she equipped Caitlin Clark to be a premier point guard in the WNBA. But again, she was getting criticized too. People pointing at her and saying she needed to be fired because the Fever started out slowly. Hot takes. Thank goodness this is not hot take radio. Because hot takes, very often, they burn up. Caitlin Clark is tearing up the WNBA with her passing. Her turnovers have come down. Her team is getting used to her. She's getting used to them. They're one of the youngest rosters in the league. They're figuring it out. And now they're not only getting close to 500, but they're within reach of a playoff spot with a dozen games to go. Wouldn't that just defeat all the visions and views and purposes of the haters? Coming up, a bit of a rough weekend for Vikings fans who believe J.J. McCarthy is their next franchise QB. Well, he's on the shelf for a year. That's actually an announcement that stunned me. How will he respond? But also, what does this mean for Justin Jefferson? Had a chance to ask a Vikings insider a couple of questions. We'll bring back part of that conversation. Glad to have you with us. It's a Monday at A-Law Radio and then our Facebook page, too.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
He did, undergo surgery actually this morning on that meniscus. It was led by our team doctor, Dr. Chris Larson at TCO. It was a successful procedure, but it did reveal that a repair was necessary, which will end JJ's 2024 season.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
The dejected voice of one Kevin O'Connell, head coach of the Minnesota Vikings. And I know this happened late last week. I was stunned. We talked about his injury and that they were going to do a surgery to figure out what was necessary in order to get him back on the field. Never expected it to be a season ender for the rookie quarterback that the Vikings drafted in the first round just a couple of months ago. Now, Jim Harbaugh, his head coach at Michigan when they won the national championship at the beginning of the year. And of course, Harbaugh weighing in and vouching for J.J. McCarthy despite the injury.
I know how the story's going to end with J.J. I've been to this movie with him. There's nothing can keep him down. And I think it's not going to be life altering. Bump in the road. And I think that's the way Coach explained it as well.
That means it is Sam Darnold's team moving forward, at least out of the gate for the Vikings. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence at A-Law Radio and then our Facebook page as well. Had a chance to catch up with host and insider Luke Braun. He was in L.A., actually. Locked on Vikings is his podcast. And just a couple of minutes of this conversation, because I really wanted to know what he thought about the impact on Justin Jefferson with, the multiple quarterbacks that he could catch passes from this year, but no longer having Kirk Cousins, and also wanted to get his reaction to the JJ season ender.
So it's one of those weird things that plays out this way with meniscus injuries sometimes. Like, this same story plays out where a guy will play the whole game, everything looks fine, they're talking after the game going, well, I got to learn from that interception. And then the next day they wake up and their knee is a little sore. And it's like, well, we'll just be cautious, but we don't think it's serious. And so we'll get an MRI and then boom, out for the season. And that's just like how this knee injury tends to present itself. So it like tailor made to blindside you. But the decision that they made with that surgery, like they didn't have to make it a season ending surgery, but the choice that they made prioritizes his long-term health and his long-term future, which is absolutely the right move. Just not only from a value perspective of, you don't want your quarterback having knee issues at the age of 28, but also just ethically, like, let's get this thing fixed and get it right. And it's okay, we'll do a Sam Darnold here. What the team needs and his health, like, those goals are aligned. I think it would be short-sighted to rush him through a procedure like this, possibly causing long-term issues, just to give him, six extra weeks of a season, and he might not even be playing for that. Like, it's just not really worth it.
Well, let's talk about what you had seen from him so far and what had stood out, because a lot of people were raving about JJ even in that first preseason game where he had a tough second quarter but came back in the third quarter with a pair of touchdown passes and looked more like a guy who'd had some solid reps and maybe was ready to make some big steps.
That first couple of drives were really shaky. The interception was really bad, some pretty bad misses in the flat. Shaky stuff, things to correct. And that's kind of what I had been seeing from him throughout all of camp and OTAs and everything. He was not to the point yet where we start talking about him as a week one starter and all. Like, we were a ways from that. But you could see when he shook off the nerves a little bit and he settled down in the third quarter And then he started throwing beautiful bombs down the field and fantastic all over the place. The timing was getting better and everything was really nice. And you started to see the seeds of what they're going for. So you got this preview of, okay, this is the vision. And the work is to get there, is to change how he does a lot of things so that he can do that consistently. We were not to the consistent part yet. We had a lot of plays in OTAs where you see the process, not quite what it needs to be, but it would get a little bit better every single day. And that's what you wanted. I probably was going to expect him to maybe push for like the bye week. Maybe he goes in, maybe, you know, Thanksgiving he goes in, something like that. Obviously it's a moot point now. The other thing next to that is that Sam Darnold was playing very, very well. And I think he earned every shot in the world to take that job and keep it. And you have to kind of value that as well. But maybe the best way to put it is to quote Kevin O'Connell, who said, "We have seen as much as we need to view him as a franchise quarterback." I think those are really strong words for one preseason game, but the way he works, the way that they're with him, like everything that he had done had proven that to them, and they were very happy with that. So I don't think that changes in the long term just because he has to go into a rehab process now.
So if the team has a long-term perspective, that's one thing. What kind of reaction have you heard from fans since this season ender was announced for JJ?
Oh, it's just sad. I think everybody got really excited and they were allowed to be excited for about 36 hours. And now we have to wait longer. And then you think about, oh my God, well, what if he doesn't come back the same? This is actually really similar to the way things played out with Irv Smith Jr. a few years ago. Tight end Irv Smith Jr. had this great camp. Looked awesome in the preseason, looked like he was actually ready to take this big step forward. And then it was the same thing where he played a game and then he has a little bit of a sore knee and suddenly he was out for the year. And he didn't come back the same. You know, when he came back the next camp, he was like really struggling and ended up not even getting a second contract. And now he's kind of barely hanging on to a spot in the league in general. And I think that if we're concerned about anything, it's that. I think mostly it's just we kind of saw just enough to fall in love with him and now be sad that he's gone.
Earlier in the summer, so going back to early June, Justin Jefferson signs this record contract. So what is the Sam Darnold piece and really the rest of the Vikings offense? What impact is that on Justin Jefferson in his first year without Cousins as the QB?
Yeah, well, it kind of sucks for Darnold as he gets this opportunity that he's very much earned all summer ever since he signed with the Vikings. He's earned the shot to be QB1, but with no Addison possibly, no TJ Hockenson to start. It's already the weapons that you'd be really excited about are dwindling, and who knows who gets hurt week one, right? The offense has a pass blocking line that you can be excited about with Christian Darrisaw and Brian O'Neill in the bookends. And you know, this run game with Aaron Jones, we'll see where that goes. But ultimately, I do still think that you've got Justin Jefferson. If Darnold can take care of the football, which he's never really been able to consistently do, but if he can take that leap forward, we can talk about him again as a true starting quarterback in this league. We got to see that. And that's why he's doing the bridge quarterback thing. And he's really keeping the seat warm. And he's sort of hunkering down and taking all the body blows that the Vikings are going to get from a really brutal start to the season if you look at their schedule.
So not high hopes, according to Luke Braun, as we went through our conversation. You can get the rest of that on our podcast. Be available anywhere you get your podcast, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. And the full conversation is part of hour number two when he joined us from L.A. But I felt like with him and with a lot of Vikings fans, the idea is 2025 will be terrific. But for now, we're willing to make the sacrifice. It's what, year three or season three with Kevin O'Connell and the new front office, willing to wait and continue to put the pieces in place, even though we now are going with a bridge quarterback. Although people are raving about what they've seen from Sam Darnold in this year, well, this preseason, in this year in which he's about to start over. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Again, my thanks to Luke Braun of Locked On Vikings joining us to talk about the J.J. McCarthy situation and the impact on the offense. We did also talk about the defense. Oh, and Dallas Turner, who was their number two draft pick out of Alabama. So really good stuff. We talked NFC North, best quarterback in the NFC North. So it is worth grabbing if you're a football lover, since the season is nearly upon us. To that end, and while we're talking quarterbacks, Antonio Pierce was true to his word. He did let us know following preseason game number two that his starting quarterback, at least for week one, will be Gardner Minshew.
Experience, the operation, the processing, just everything we saw in practice. Some of it showed up in the games. A lot of stuff we can get better at. I don't think anything here is a finished product. But based off of where we want to go in the first quarter of the season, we feel like Gardner gives us the best opportunity.
So Gardner Minshew versus Aiden O'Connell. There's certainly energy with Gardner. I said this earlier. He brings a lot of tenacity. He's intense. He brings energy, of course, because of the way that he'll run around and he'll force the issue. And honestly, I'm starting to feel a little bit like he's following the footsteps of a Ryan Fitzpatrick. No, he's got a ways to go, but this will be team number four for him. And he started for the first three. He's there. He's available. He knows the playbook. He'll do whatever the coaches ask of him. And if this is how his career continues, a couple of years here with a franchise, a couple of years there with a franchise, but you're still earning a paycheck and you have the chance to start every single place you go, I can imagine, even though he's not an elite quarterback, if he can find some consistency, maybe this can translate into another deal, right? So his year with the Colts having a winning record last season, he was a Pro Bowler, that helped him get this job, well, get a job with the Raiders and compete for the starting gig. So good for him. I mean, I appreciate a guy or a gal, whether it's sports or some other walk of life, who has to earn that paycheck and earn that keep, but is willing to say, I don't care what you think of me. I don't care if I'm plan C, D, E, F. I don't care if I'm not your first, second, third, or fourth choice. You just give me the job, and I will show you that I'm right for it. I should have been your first choice all along. It's kind of how I felt about my radio career. Just put me in, coach. All right, good stuff. Great to connect with you. We're off and running into our work week. So we'll do more football coming up on our Monday night show. We'll see what other mischief we can get into. If you missed the announcement about our next After Hours producer, that was Hour 3 on the podcast. And photos up now on Facebook. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Boom!
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
He did, undergo surgery actually this morning on that meniscus. It was led by our team doctor, Dr. Chris Larson at TCO. It was a successful procedure, but it did reveal that a repair was necessary, which will end JJ's 2024 season.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
The dejected voice of one Kevin O'Connell, head coach of the Minnesota Vikings. And I know this happened late last week. I was stunned. We talked about his injury and that they were going to do a surgery to figure out what was necessary in order to get him back on the field. Never expected it to be a season ender for the rookie quarterback that the Vikings drafted in the first round just a couple of months ago. Now, Jim Harbaugh, his head coach at Michigan when they won the national championship at the beginning of the year. And of course, Harbaugh weighing in and vouching for JJ McCarthy despite the injury.
I know how the story's going to end with JJ. I've been to this movie with him. There's nothing can keep him down. And I think it's not going to be life altering. Bump in the road. And I think that's the way Coach explained it as well.
That means it is Sam Darnold's team moving forward, at least out of the gate for the Vikings. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence at A-Law Radio and then our Facebook page as well. Had a chance to catch up with host and insider Luke Braun. He was in L.A., actually. Locked on Vikings is his podcast. And just a couple of minutes of this conversation, because I really wanted to know what he thought about the impact on Justin Jefferson with, the multiple quarterbacks that he could catch passes from this year, but no longer having Kirk Cousins, and also wanted to get his reaction to the JJ season ender.
So it's one of those weird things that plays out this way with meniscus injuries sometimes. Like, this same story plays out where a guy will play the whole game, everything looks fine, they're talking after the game going, well, you know, I got to learn from that interception. And then the next day they wake up and their knee is a little sore, and it's like, well, we'll just be cautious, but we don't think it's serious. And so we'll get an MRI, and then boom, out for the season. And that's just like how this knee injury tends to present itself. So it like tailor made to blindside you. But the decision that they made with that surgery, like, they didn't have to make it a season ending surgery, but the choice that they made prioritizes his long-term health and his long-term future, which is absolutely the right move. Just not only from a value perspective of, you know, you don't want your quarterback having knee issues at the age of 28, but also just ethically, like, just let's get this thing fixed and get it right. And it's okay, we'll do a Sam Darnold here. What the team needs and his health, like, those goals are aligned. I think it would be short-sighted to rush him through a procedure like this, possibly causing long-term issues, just to give him, what, six extra weeks of a season, and he might not even be playing for that. Like, it's just not really worth it.
Well, let's talk about what you had seen from him so far and what had stood out, because a lot of people were raving about JJ even in that first preseason game where he had a tough second quarter but came back in the third quarter with a pair of touchdown passes and looked more like a guy who'd had some solid reps and maybe was ready to make some big steps.
That first couple of drives were really shaky. The interception was really bad, some pretty bad misses in the flat. Shaky stuff, things to correct. And that's kind of what I had been seeing from him throughout all of camp and OTAs and everything. He was not to the point yet where we start talking about him as a week one starter and all. Like, we were a ways from that. But you could see when he shook off the nerves a little bit and he settled down in the third quarter. And then he started throwing beautiful bombs down the field and fantastic all over the place. The timing was getting better and everything was really nice. And you started to see the seeds of what they're going for. So you got this preview of, okay, this is the vision, and the work is to get there, is to change how he does a lot of things so that he can do that consistently. We were not to the consistent part yet. We had a lot of plays in OTAs where you see the process not quite what it needs to be, but it would get a little bit better every single day, and that's what you wanted. I probably was going to expect him to maybe push for, like, the bye week. Maybe he goes in, maybe, you know, Thanksgiving he goes in, something like that. Obviously, it's a moot point now. The other thing next to that is that Sam Darnold was playing very, very well, and I think he earned every shot in the world to take that job and keep it. And you have to kind of value that as well. But maybe the best way to put it is to quote Kevin O'Connell, who said, "We have seen as much as we need to view him as a franchise quarterback." I think those are really strong words for one preseason game, but the way he works, the way that they're with him, like, everything that he had done had proven that to them, and they were very happy with that. So I don't think that changes in the long term just because he has to go into a rehab process now.
So if the team has a long-term perspective, that's one thing. What kind of reaction have you heard from fans since this season ender was announced for JJ?
Oh, it's just sad. I think everybody got really excited, and they were allowed to be excited for about 36 hours, and now we have to wait longer. And then you think about, oh, my God, well, what if he doesn't come back the same? This is actually really similar to the way things played out with Irv Smith Jr. a few years ago. Tight end Irv Smith Jr. had this great camp, looked awesome in the preseason, looked like he was actually ready to take this big step forward, and then it was the same thing where he played a game and then he has a little bit of a sore knee and suddenly he was out for the year. And he didn't come back the same. You know, when he came back the next camp, he was like really struggling and ended up not even getting a second contract, and now he's kind of barely hanging on to a spot in the league in general. And I think that if we're concerned about anything, it's that. I think mostly it's just we kind of saw just enough to fall in love with him and now be sad that he's gone.
Earlier in the summer, so going back to early June, Justin Jefferson signs this record contract. So what is the Sam Darnold piece and really the rest of the Vikings offense? What impact is that on Justin Jefferson in his first year without Cousins as the QB?
Yeah, it kind of sucks for Darnold as he gets this opportunity that he's very much earned all summer, ever since he signed with the Vikings. He's earned the shot to be QB1, but with no Addison possibly, no TJ Hockenson to start, it's already the weapons that you'd be really excited about are dwindling, and who knows who gets hurt week one, right? The offense has a pass-blocking line that you can be excited about with Christian Darrisaw and Brian O'Neill in the bookends. And, you know, this run game with Aaron Jones, we'll see where that goes. But ultimately, I do still think that you've got Justin Jefferson. If Darnold can take care of the football, which he's never really been able to consistently do, but if he can take that leap forward, we can talk about him again as a true starting quarterback in this league. We got to see that. And that's why he's doing the bridge quarterback thing. And he's really keeping the seat warm. And he's sort of hunkering down and taking all the body blows that the Vikings are going to get from a really brutal start to the season if you look at their schedule.
So not high hopes, according to Luke Braun, as we went through our conversation. You can get the rest of that on our podcast. Be available anywhere you get your podcast, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. And the full conversation is part of hour number two when he joined us from L.A. But I felt like with him and with a lot of Vikings fans, the idea is 2025 will be terrific. But for now, we're willing to make the sacrifice. It's what, year three or season three with Kevin O'Connell and the new front office, willing to wait and continue to put the pieces in place, even though we now are going with a bridge quarterback. Although people are raving about what they've seen from Sam Darnold in this year, well, this preseason, in this year in which he's about to start over. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Again, my thanks to Luke Braun of Locked On Vikings joining us to talk about the J.J. McCarthy situation and the impact on the offense. We did also talk about the defense. Oh, and Dallas Turner, who was their number two draft pick out of Alabama. So really good stuff. We talked NFC North, best quarterback in the NFC North. So it is worth grabbing if you're a football lover, since the season is nearly upon us. To that end, and while we're talking quarterbacks, Antonio Pierce was true to his word. He did let us know following preseason game number two that his starting quarterback, at least for week one, will be Gardner Minshew.
Experience, the operation, the processing, just everything we saw in practice. Some of it showed up in the games. A lot of stuff we can get better at. I don't think anything here is a finished product. But based off of where we want to go in the first quarter of the season, we feel like Gardner gives us the best opportunity.
So Gardner Minshew versus Aiden O'Connell. There's certainly energy with Gardner. I said this earlier. He brings a lot of tenacity. He's intense. He brings energy, of course, because of the way that he'll run around and he'll force the issue. And honestly, I'm starting to feel a little bit like he's following the footsteps of a Ryan Fitzpatrick. No, he's got a ways to go, but this will be team number four for him. And he started for the first three. He's there. He's available. He knows the playbook. He'll do whatever the coaches ask of him. And if this is how his career continues, a couple of years here with a franchise, a couple of years there with a franchise, but you're still earning a paycheck and you have the chance to start every single place you go, I can imagine, even though he's not an elite quarterback, if he can find some consistency, maybe this can translate into another deal, right? So his year with the Colts having a winning record last season, he was a Pro Bowler, that helped him get this job, well, get a job with the Raiders and compete for the starting gig. So good for him. I mean, I appreciate a guy or a gal, whether it's sports or some other walk of life, who has to earn that paycheck and earn that keep, but is willing to say, I don't care what you think of me. I don't care if I'm plan C, D, E, F. I don't care if I'm not your first, second, third, or fourth choice. You just give me the job, and I will show you that I'm right for it. I should have been your first choice all along. Kind of how I felt about my radio career. Just put me in, coach. All right, good stuff. Great to connect with you. We're off and running into our work week. So we'll do more football coming up on our Monday night show. We'll see what other mischief we can get into. If you missed the announcement about our next After Hours producer, that was hour three on the podcast. And photos up now on Facebook. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Boom!